Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. For today's episode, it was an honor to be joined by Irina Mizziolek. Not only was Irina one of the first 10 people in the world to become a Salesforce CTA, but she was in fact the very first female CTA globally. Through the episode, it was fascinating to hear more about Irina's journey, what her review board experience looked like back in 2011, and how much she has gone on to give back to the ecosystem, including sitting on review boards as a judge, running CTA workshops, and providing her expertise for the architect and developer certifications. For me, this was a really amazing episode to record, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
So, Irina, thank you very much for joining me. Absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
I reached out to you a couple of weeks back, and I was pointed in your direction by someone from Salesforce in Australia, Dave Norris, and he said that I can't do this podcast without having you on the show. So here we are, and I'm really excited to talk through your journey, Salesforce and non-Salesforce, and hear more about you.
He is very kind. I think very fondly of him and to the other folks that are the Salesforce old-timers, really. It was a very tight-knit community, so it's such a pleasure to come across them again.
Sure. So we've got a lot of Salesforce stuff to discuss, but I always like to start before the Salesforce career got started and to find out a bit more about kind of what you did that kind of led you to the Salesforce space. So what did your career look like before Salesforce?
Oh my gosh, let me start from Adam and Eve, from my early days of coding. So I was born in the Soviet Russia back then, and the computers were at that time mini computers, PDP and mainframes and so forth. So my first coding language was Fortran. I was working on the mainframes back then, and I absolutely loved it. I started coding when I was in my summer between middle school and high school, and just fell in love with coding. I got lucky because I didn't know I wasn't supposed to, you know, being a female and such. Nobody told me that this is not what females typically do. And then spent many, many years coding in the United States and so forth, and then eventually became an architect. Spent most of my time on the .NET platform, and then in 2011 switched over to Salesforce.
Sure. So just on that point around, no one told you that wasn't something you should be doing as a female, but what did that initial journey look like? Because were there any other females or women in tech at that point when you first discovered coding?
Well, most of the females I have seen were the punch cards, if you remember those. So they were the ladies that once you wrote the program, you handed to, and they were doing the punch carding, which was the keyboard, and they produced those. I remember the paper cards with holes in them, long, long, long time ago. So the majority of the girls were there. But I was 15 at the time, right? And I was surrounded by boys, and all of them were coding. I was the only female there. It was great.
Sure. So obviously you had a strong coding background and led into architecture. But when you first found the Salesforce ecosystem, was that as an architect or were you hands-on in a coding role at that point?
I was an architect, but I was still hands-on coding. So I wouldn't necessarily write all the production code, but any types of POCs or so forth were coding. And at the time when I just started Salesforce, the engagements or the implementations were much smaller than in the later years. So a lot of them involved coding anyway. They weren't such enterprise scale engagements as later.
Sure. So roughly when was that you got into the Salesforce ecosystem?
2011, 2012, I still remember.
Okay, cool. And you say the projects were smaller, but what did a typical project look like? Because I think a lot of people are now entering the ecosystem and seeing what a big enterprise project looks like now. But to understand, your role as an architect back then, what did a typical engagement look like?
On the .NET world, right, the architecture projects were something like connect a bunch of .NET systems with Java systems, with main systems to do trading of some stocks, right? That was the type of projects that I was doing as a .NET architect. As a force platform developer and architect. It was more things like, for example, a project for the metro, Portland Metro. I live in Portland, Oregon, where we needed to work for the recycling company and keep track of the different recycling items that they were sending through their processing. So a lot of workflow. Visual Force was just coming into beta back then, if you can imagine. So really, you could only develop in Apex, a little bit of Force. It was still kind of shaky, object models and so forth. So not a lot of integrations back then either.
And can you remember what your, so coming from a strong development background into Salesforce, can you remember what you thought of the limitations or the coding capability of the platform?
Well, to be frank, I was scared for my career because back then I was a true developer, right? I was a true developer, true architect, true techie, right? And here I am getting in a box of something that would be comparable to, I don't know, SAP or something, which is mostly configuration-based program. And really all my hardcore skills, I was just not sure where exactly they would apply. At the same time, I was burned out from doing somewhat similar types of projects over and over again. And how many more times can I write, I don't know, the security layer of an application or object store or whatever. It's I felt the need to focus more on business issues instead of solving the same technical problems over and over again. Sure. Yet it was terrifying.
And how long did that fear last for?
Until Visual Force stabilized and the APIs became much more stable. So that, and really the way I resolved that internal dilemma for myself is I went heavily into integrations and custom development. I did very little configuration because there were usually colleagues of mine that were very happy to stay in that space. I stayed out of workflows, approval processes, but integrations, any JavaScript, any backend, very fancy processing, especially around security, was always a lot of fun.
Sure. And can you remember when things got like really complex or the project started really to scale? Can you remember what that trigger point was?
I don't know if it was the maturity of the ecosystem itself or the company that I was working for. That I cannot tell. I was working for CentriStance, which was later acquired by NTT Data. It's possible that we just started targeting larger customers, but also the acceptance of Salesforce in larger customer base became much more prevalent. Probably 2012 or so, I was working very closely with the Salesforce certification teams. And my question to them, why do we need this certification? And one of the messages that Salesforce was sending is that it needs to de-risk large implementations. And in order to de-risk them, it needs to have a set of architects in the wild working on those, right? So that Salesforce knows that those will not become red accounts, those implementations would not fail. So what that says is by 2012 or so, the problem has become wide enough and the integration's difficult enough.
Yeah, that makes sense. And we're going to obviously talk about certifications a lot through this, but you mentioned the ecosystem and was it the broader ecosystem? But now we know the Salesforce ecosystem is the Ohana and you know the family feel and everyone is very much involved in that ecosystem. But going back to 2011, was it similar? Did you get that feel at that point?
Well, I'm biased. I love the Salesforce ecosystem, so I will always look at it through the rose-tinted glasses, right? But in my early days of the CTA, right, there was a very strong community of CTAs with a drive. It was a very small group, so initially about 10 of us or so, but a very strong drive on how can we grow more architects. And there was a lot of pro bono work done by architects, both in trying to grow other architects, record webinars, just propagate across the world as much as possible to make this more acceptable. And Dreamforces of that time, also if you think back to that or even before, they have always been such a communal feeling to them. That portion has always been there.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like a festival, right? It's insane. So talking CTA, at the point you joined Salesforce, there was no such thing as a CTA. And obviously you were in the first, as you mentioned, the first 10. So can you remember the first time you thought of becoming a CTA or how even you came to know of the CTA process?
That was a very funny experience because I was just working on my client and not bothering myself with any CTAs or certifications or anything. An email came through from Salesforce saying, hey, we're considering establishing this program. We're opening up a beta. Would you like to register? Without even thinking about it, I replied, yes, sure, why not? Sent it off. Then thought about it for a while, sent an email to my leadership at my company saying, hey, I'm thinking of participating in this. What do you guys think? I said, well, sure, yeah, why not? The beta process that I participated in was really beta, including things like the multiple choice exam at that time included twice the number of questions because they still needed to weed out the answers. The system broke on me while I was trying to take the system. Plus, it took so much longer that I was getting late to my customer meeting. So I was really stressing out on this and just submit. I don't care if it's right or wrong, just submit. Had no idea if it's right or wrong. The questions were also difficult. They still are difficult because they don't necessarily have one correct answer. It's more of which answers are better than others. And then the orals at the time were also brutal. So right now the oral exams are three judges. Back then I had 12 judges. So it was a room full of very experienced folks that I have never met in my life, drilling me on just about every aspect of Salesforce down into the depths of it. So it was not really a conscious decision that, yes, I'm going to study, and yes, I'm going to become a CTA, because there are no materials to study at that point either.
That's crazy. So those 12 people, they couldn't have all been CTAs, right? So they...
No. So I asked afterwards, so some of them never actually became CTAs. What Salesforce did is it chose the best subject matter experts on specific topics. So it took integration, found the best guy they had anywhere, and so forth. So regardless of the topic, I had the best experts in the room.
Yeah,
which
wow.
was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Because it's funny because I always ask, when I'm speaking to a CTA, I always ask them, well, what was your gap? Like, what did you need to work on in order to pass the CTA? Because everyone has a weakness, right? So,
right.
So for you to be in a room with 12 experts in a domain or in a, like, they wouldn't have a gap in that area. That they're the experts and they're looking for your gaps in the area that they're an expert. So you had it tough.
I had it tough, but I had a lot of fun because basically on every one of those domains, they took me to the area where I had to say, I don't know. Literally every one of them. And therefore, until I got the results, I had no idea whether I passed. I assumed I didn't, since apparently I didn't know any of the topics.
Sure. Well, it's crazy. So you were one of the first 10 CTAs in the world, but you were the first female CTA in the world. Now, right now, looking back, I mean, both of those are an amazing achievement, right? First 10 and first. But did you understand how big of an achievement that was going to go on and be, and how big the CTA certification would become in the ecosystem?
For me, the most valuable thing really was the community of the CTAs that formed at that time, even more so than the impact on my career and such. It was just such a pleasure to be surrounded by such smart, capable people, and so different, all of them, right? I became friends with a lot of them and still maintain friendship with a lot of them. As far as career and such, this became clear as I started working with Salesforce on what the certification actually means and what is the next generation of the certification, because it has gone through a few generations. And trying to get to the root of why is it that Salesforce wants to have such a high bar and whether to maintain it as high bar and so forth. Probably a year or so after the certification, it became clear that this is actually something that is starting to get recognized on the market.
And what was your view on the bar being so high? Because, you know, I think it's amazing that they have this bar and it means that everyone's striving for it and it's such an important thing. But there must have been a time that when they were working through that process where, you know, it was on the fence as to, do we make it really tough or should we have this open to kind of as many people as possible?
Yeah, and this exactly the dilemma is there was a very large gap between the multiple choice exam and the orals, and the passing rate was really low, which was really demoralizing for both the Salesforce itself, the judges, and the candidates. I served as a judge on those orals for many years, and the very first time when I served, I saw 12 candidates and nobody passed. It was really heartbreaking because, on the other hand, The CTA certification is unique in that it covers the breadth and the depth on every subject. And for the complexity of the implementations that are happening right now, you actually need to have it. I don't view the CTA itself as a goal. I view CTA as a recognition of the capabilities you develop while working on projects, right? In order to close that gap between multiple choice and the CTA orals, Salesforce created this pyramid with the designer certs, as they're called, so that people can be recognized for architecture expertise in a certain area, but not necessarily covering the full breadth of the certification.
Sure. Because you gave back immediately, right? You were part of this group that was giving back. And can you tell us about some of that work that you did? Because I know that there have been certain principles that you've been heavily involved in that, you know, have helped many CTAs over the years. So can you give us some insight into what they look like?
Sure. In the very beginning, we tried to record webinars, you know, how to think like a certified architect, you know, and so forth. Those had variable success just because of the structure. We were lacking the structure behind the promotion of this, just within Salesforce itself. Then, as the time progressed, Salesforce started taking more active role in running those groups and teams and so forth. So I would say that now they're architect advocates and it's starting to get better, but there is still work to be done in that area. That said, there has always been a very strong informal community of architects mentoring other architects. I know a lot of folks in the ecosystem because of that also. It's running them through mock interviews, pointing out the gaps in their knowledge, trying to explain how to think about things and so forth. I've worked quite a bit on the certifications themselves as well, trying to focus on things that matter and trying to discard those that are superfluous for both the architect and the developer certifications.
The developer, before it was developer one, developer two, it was 401 and 501.
Right. So 501 had a free coding exercise that was judged as well, right? So I was a judge on that and then helped write questions for the multiple choice of the developer one, developer two as well as some of the architect exams. And then helped Salesforce establish this workshop that exists right now. I highly recommend it for folks who are thinking about it, who have not done it. The first time I kind of winged it. I was just, hey, let me do what I always do and see what happens.
Sure.
This worked and then it became an official program. Maybe I should tell you how it works. So as a candidate, one of the bigger problems that you will run into is the time management. And the time management on two aspects. One is answering questions that are posed to you. So for a question that is posed, you probably should take somewhere between 30 and 90 seconds to explain, no matter how difficult the technical topic is. And second is in preparation. So you're given a scenario and you're supposed to come up with a coherent solution and you may run out of time there. So those were the two aspects that we focused our workshop on. So not so much the knowledge about how to, you know, write a trigger or whatever, but rather how to answer questions concisely, how to draw diagrams concisely, how to absorb information, how many passes to go through it, and so forth.
Yeah, nice. And I think that's key, right? I think if you haven't worked as an architect for a considerable period of time, like those are skills perhaps you don't have, and you can know as much as you need to know about Salesforce, but if you can't articulate the answer to a question, or if you can't manage expectations or hold the room, then these are all things that you'll struggle with through the review board.
Exactly. And those are very much, and this is why I care about the certification. Those are real life skills. Those are not artificial skills that are getting judged, right? The time to come up with a solution is very much equivalent to being in a technical pre-sales role, where you're given some requirements, so they're very vague, who knows what, and you need to come up with something very quick, right? It's often on the spot in front of the customer. The other aspect of it, of answering concisely and precisely, is something that you get good at if you talk to the customer's architects a lot, because a lot of them have very strong opinions and they have no patience for listening for a while.
Sure.
This episode of Talent Hub Talk is sponsored by our friends from Flow Republic. Flow Republic is a Salesforce architect academy that works with individuals and businesses to upskill and prepare Salesforce architects for the CTA review board. They also have a number of other offerings, including coaching and guiding on areas such as soft skills, consulting, and design training. Flow Republic are some of the brightest minds in the Salesforce ecosystem and have a proven track record of developing Salesforce professionals and helping architects to reach their goal of becoming a CTA. To find out more about the value they can add, please check out flowrepublic.com.
And on to your point about the developer certifications, when I first entered the ecosystem as a recruiter, I used to love seeing the 501 certification on people's CVs, because I'm not technical and you know, I'm taking a risk whenever I send a CV to a client, because it's my reputation that I'm making good decisions behind the people I'm representing. So for me, that was always a level of comfort. What did that certification at the time mean to you as someone that wrote the questions and would assess, I guess, the requirements and the work that people put forward as their assessment? Was someone a very good developer if they passed that test, or were they just a good Salesforce developer?
I personally would be more comfortable hiring somebody with 501 as well. The reason for it is it's not so much the knowledge that gets tested, but the actual practical aspects of it. Because you submit code, and if that code is subpar, you will not pass. It's as simple as that. What does it mean to be subpar is not following the best practices of the Salesforce coding. So the code may or may not be very clean. It will still pass. The code may or may not follow a certain preferences, you know, where to put brackets or whatever, it will still pass. But if it's not following the best practices, it will fail. For me personally, as a judge, it was also very interesting to read the different styles of how the same problem can be solved. Interesting portion for me, when I compare my judging that certification career versus taking that same exam, is I made a decision when I was coding. I was pretty sure that this was against what the judges wanted to see, but I had a good reason. And so I wrote the code how I wanted to do it anyway, although I left a big blob of comments that I am pretty sure that this is not what you're expecting. However, this is much more efficient, and I'm going to do it this way anyway.
Yeah.
Then as a judge, when I was looking at this, I probably did get ticked down for that, because it did not follow what they would assume the best practice. I passed anyway, because sure, you know, the rest of it was fine. But it's the adherence to best practices that gets counted there.
Yeah. And did you, looking back at your time of judging those, would you have had access to, I guess you wouldn't know someone's background, right? So you wouldn't know if someone had come through a development background, but having worked with lots of developers, did you see a particular career path that people would have potentially gone through before Salesforce that made them a strong Salesforce developer?
Well, in general, it helps to have developed before. So a Salesforce platform has some unique features that if you come from a different background, so for example, .NET or Java, you will have habits that don't translate into Salesforce at all. And so for some of those developers coming from those backgrounds, they need to kind of break the habits in order to relearn it. But that said, it's easier to break those habits than, for example, coming from the admin background and learning to code, because you never get the formal education of, you know, what does it mean to have a class? What does it mean to have an object? The focus is not there.
Yeah, sure. So we had a quick chat before recording, and I said it always it kind of amazes me that someone gets to CTA and then kind of takes a step out of the ecosystem. So your role now, like what's your focus now? You've achieved so much in the Salesforce ecosystem and given so much back to the ecosystem and helped, you know, countless architects and developers on their journey. But now you're kind of not focusing on Salesforce. So what's your focus right now?
Thank you for that question. I see it as a progression, right? First, your scope is small. You might be working on a function. Then your scope gets bigger. You might be working on the whole system. Then your scope gets even bigger. You might be working on a bunch of interconnected systems and how does it all fit. And the reason that I'm no longer actively working in the Salesforce ecosystem is that my scope became larger. Salesforce allowed me to place my focus outside of the systems and more on the problems that we're trying to solve, and which led me into the enterprise architecture space. I find that it was much easier for me to progress into that because the CTA over the years of kind of honing those skills gave me such a breadth of the different aspects. So whether it's organizational aspects of a company because you need to deal with the release management or maybe some of the governance aspects of the data management or whatever that is. That gave me an incredible background to grow as an enterprise architect. And now my role is even different from that. I'm playing a role more of a CTO for a company where I oversee that landscape as opposed to just solving specific problems for a client.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting because I think a lot of people see CTA as a destination. And for you, it wasn't. And it wasn't something that you'd necessarily planned and navigated towards. It was presented to you as an opportunity, which you took, but it's also now opened up further doors, right? So it's not the destination, but it's something that can enable you to reach your longer term goals.
For sure. And for folks who view CTA as a goal, which I can certainly understand, it certainly is a worthy goal. But I would suggest that there is another way to look at it, where the CTA is the recognition of your work as an architect rather than the goal in itself. The goal is to become a better architect, and the CTA comes as a side effect of that.
Sure. And that leads me on nicely to my final question, because it what makes a great architect? And you have exposure of this in and outside of the ecosystem, right? So what makes a great architect, in your opinion, system or not specific to a IT system or technology?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I keep wondering how to grow next generations of architects, right? It would be nice if you could just put some water, fertilizer, and life would be good, right? I think there are a couple of aspects to it. One is the personality. For better or worse, it's the personality. You need to be able to be in the middle of the line on a lot of the aspects. So I think of Myers-Briggs or any of those other personality trait things, you can't go too far extreme on one of them. You can't be in the depths of the weeds on some technical aspects and lose the big picture. You need to be able to do big picture and the next moment get deep into something. You can't be just systems versus just people. You have to be able to take into account both. So it's the balance of the different points of views across the universe. That's one. And the other aspect is then amount of failures you have had in your career. How many times did you make wrong decisions? Because what is your experience? Because you will never succeed and become a true architect if you have not seen dead ends. So you need to reach them a number of times so that you know how to avoid them next time, when it becomes almost a feeling of experience.
Yeah, that's also a really interesting point, because I personally feel that, and this is probably different around the time you started your CTA journey, because it wasn't a big thing, right? In terms of no one really knew what it was. It wasn't like everyone was rushing towards being a CTA. I have the feeling in the market right now that it's a rush. Like, people are in such a rush to be classed as an architect or to be a CTA. And it's you can't buy experience, and you can't, like you said, you have to have failed and you have to have gone down the dead ends. And like to get to that goal of being a CTA, it takes time. And I think that's something that people now probably don't appreciate as much. Like, your career before Salesforce and before getting into the ecosystem massively helped you becoming a CTA, right?
Oh, for sure. What the CTA exam is about, it's not about checking your knowledge. It's about checking your experience. Just think of that. So memorizing answers is just not going to do it, because you can answer some superficial questions, but you will not be able to answer the questions at the second, third level.
Sure.
So hands-on experience under stressful conditions if possible, such as pre-sales or when you're rushed for time, as many quirky, problematic situations as possible, you know, some SAML server is not talking to something else. So troubleshooting, just volunteer to help anybody on your teams that is running into any kind of problems.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, thank you so much. I've really loved hearing about your journey, but just great to speak to someone that's achieved so much and obviously has gone on to great things as well outside of the ecosystem. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review.
We came for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.